You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I am tired. I only want to keep it real with everyone that listens. But who is feeling this pandemic exhaustion? I mean, I know I'm not the only one. Oh my gosh. I think we all are a little tired. And I'm asking everyone listening during this time to please be easy on yourselves, but also please be easy on others. We really don't know the battles that we're all dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and I need this reminder as well, to just, you know, give a little more grace to people that might be going through something. And the fact that we are creating theater and still going is a Herculean effort. We have taken that something that has been asleep for a year and a half, $1 billion corporation that has been asleep for a year and a half, and life has completely changed during that time, and we're figuring out how to continue that experience. It's not what we knew before 2020, and what it is now is it's something completely different. And I, in this episode with Lee Silverman, she asks an interesting question about being essential, and it got me thinking about how I've been in the industry for 21 years, and this year will be 22 years. It's pretty much all I know. And again, with keeping it real with you all, I've based my worth off of achievements in the industry. I've based others' worth on their achievements in the industry. And even if they've left the industry, I've been like, you know, what are they worth to me? And as I work through things in therapy, and I work through things with other artists, and I work through things with myself, most importantly, I understand that those questions are now going out the window, that's not what it's about, that it's what this industry should never, ever, ever be about, especially during this time. I survived a pandemic. You survived a pandemic. I think the fact that we're all standing on 2 feet still, hopefully, and most of us, is the Herculean effort. And the things that we get to do, that we're lucky enough to do, is help bring the industry into a new place. But I don't know how energized I am to continue on with the same energy that I was doing before the pandemic. I'm 30. You know, I'm in my Saturn returns. I'm still feeling energized to do something and to make a change, but how much can I put myself for? I'm a COVID long hauler, so I'm battling, you know, actual health stuff, but I'm recently discovering, like, I have no time for myself. I actually just had Omicron, and it was not terrible, but I quarantined, and I had, you know, bad sinus pressure, and it was, like, snotty. It was a much different version than the first time. But I found myself not being able to relax, not being able to take care of myself, because I still had deadlines, and they were virtual deadlines. So I wasn't able to put myself first, even in that time that I needed to. I think that needs to change. I think I need to make that change. So I want everyone listening to put yourself forward, put yourselves first, because, you know, it's like you have to put the oxygen on your first and then help, you know, your kid. I think it's that situation for me, at least, because I want to be able to help the industry, but I want to be able to help myself first. And I think as a multi-hyphenate, I have to understand my limitations and my boundaries, and I have to, I'm still going to be a multi-hyphenate, of course, and I'm still going to be doing this podcast and my upcoming book and, you know, figuring out projects. But the one, I'm going to be doing all the stuff that I'm doing, but I have to find my limitations. I have to speak up for myself. I have to learn from everyone that I've had on this podcast, Ashley Kate Adams, and, you know, being your own producer, and one of her biggest things is boundaries, and I work with her so closely, and that's something I even talk about. When am I going to listen to myself? So I'm now starting to listen to myself, and I hope you start to listen to yourself too. Because the changes that you want to make in the industry, you can't change unless you have the stamina and the emotional capability and the focus and the wherewithal to be able to do it. Because without you, then you can't make that change. So put yourself forward. Make that change, but also make that change within yourself. If your body is telling you to do something, do it. And that's what I'm going to do. It only took me 30 years to figure that out. I'm really excited for you to listen to this episode with Lee Silverman. There are some technical difficulties, but I think the conversation outshines that. If you're a director or a producer, this conversation is really, really something special. There are a lot of really great nuggets of wisdom in there, but I think if you're just in the industry or not in the industry, this conversation, there are a lot of really wonderful things, insight shared. So I hope you enjoy. Lee Silverman is an incredible director. She has just worked on Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, starring Cecily Strong, SNL's Cecily Strong, written by Jane Wagner. And she is going to be directing Suffs at the Public Theater. She was also nominated for a Tony Award for her direction of the revival of Violet. She is incredible, and this conversation is really wonderful. So please, please, please comment, rate, subscribe, do all that stuff. Follow on Instagram at DearMultiHyphenate or at TheMichaelKushner. And if you want to be on the podcast, email me at DearMultiHyphenate@gmail.com or submit through my website at DearMultiHyphenate.com. And as always, thank you so much to the Broadway Podcast Network, Alan, Dory, Katie, Yo, you're all wonderful. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy. All right. So usually how I start a podcast is I give a quote and we talk about the quote. But my guest today, Lee Silverman, has suggested that we start talking about my sweater that I'm wearing, and I'm wearing a lime green cashmere sweater. So Lee, just tell me about your thoughts.
I need you to know, listeners, that we have to like really go rogue today and talk about Michael's green cashmere sweater. I can't, lime green, I'm sorry. I can't get enough of it. And I think really that's what we should devote today's podcast to.
You know, I was saying when I was younger, 16, I was like so obsessed with Ralph Lauren. I used to just clamor in those stores and just like beg for something. And I used to get one thing per year for Hanukkah. And I was thinking that this was one of the sweaters that I got, but it's not. It's definitely from my grandma. I think I walked into her closet and said, "Can I have this?" And she said, "Yes." So.
Well, I really love it. It really suits you. And I think we should just talk about things we got from our grandmothers.
So what are some of your favorite things that you got from your grandmother?
Well, my grandmother, I only knew one of my grandmothers, and I lost her just a couple of years ago. She was I would say, like, maybe one of the only people who has loved me completely unconditionally in my life. She was an amazing woman. My grandfather left her the day after their 50th wedding anniversary. Literally like note on the pillow after 50 years. And she was 70 and she lived for another 21 and a half years and she completely rebuilt herself. It was like the most incredible thing. She had this amazing last chapter and it was just glorious. And she was the most loving and the most accepting. And, you know, when I came out to her and said I had a girlfriend, she had just been left by my grandfather and she said, "I don't blame you." So anyway, what I got from her was just the most unconditional love and support. And I hold her in my heart all the time, every day.
So she basically got like the post-it note that was, "I'm sorry, but I can't."
Yeah.
After 50 years.
The craziest thing is when we moved her out of her house, we were going through, you know, all of her stuff, of course, and bringing stuff to the facility where she was going to spend the last few months of her life. And I found the note that my grandfather left her. And the thing that was crazy about it is that it said, "Dear Toots," which was the way that he referred to her. That was his pet name for her, "Dear Toots. I've taken the Neosporin," was the first line. Like, he took the Neosporin. I guess he had a blister? And then that was what he left her literally on the pillow as a goodbye after 50 years.
I'm actually speechless. But like, is like Neosporin like symbolic for anything? Like it like...
No, I think it was just like he just wanted it. And so he took it. He didn't take, by the way, anything else. He didn't take pictures. He didn't take like nothing. I mean, it's so, you know, it's such an interesting thing about humanity. And I think they had for a long time been, you know, many, many years, as far as my grandfather was concerned, basically he never wanted to get married to her, which I don't think is true. But you know, they had four kids and my dad's the oldest of four. And it's like, you know, they just, can you hear the bathroom construction?
I can, but I you know what?
Is it a problem?
We're keeping it live and we're keeping
it. Okay, great.
We're keeping it real. And I think you're establishing goals for all of us listening.
Yeah.
that we'll have a bathroom that we can reconstruct one day.
Yes, one day. I will say we haven't had a bathroom since October, working bathroom in our hallway, and it's an adventure in plumbing, and it's happening live so that you can hear it. Anyway, yes. So my grandfather left, and he left a note on the pillow saying that he was taking the Neosporin, and then my grandmother was devastated, and then went on to like do incredible things, including like taking a trip by herself to Machu Picchu. And like, she just is she's just my total hero in life. And although she did not gift me a lime green cashmere sweater, I do feel she gave me an emotional lime green cashmere sweater.
And she also gave you a saw that you can use in the background in your bathroom.
Exactly, for the bathroom. That's right.
That is, what a wild story. I'm actually a little obsessed with that, especially with how people can change overnight or like what's their intention. And it actually is kind of interesting, right? Because like you are one of the most sought after beloved directors of our time. And of course I had to snag you for my book, How to Be Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business. And we had I interviewed you for the book a few months ago. Wow, nodes. And a few months ago, and you know, you said something brilliant about the question that I asked you regarding the why. And you said, I will give you the exact quote. You said, "I think about why a lot because obviously it changes in some ways every day, and some days it doesn't. It's the only place I can be myself. I direct to try to understand the world in a different way. I look to theater makers to hold up a mirror to myself and society. And it's been the place for me that has been the most, hope, optimism, and revolution." Do you still agree with that sentiment that you said, or do you think it's changed at all?
You know, it's one of the things that's been the most challenging about COVID, right? Mm-hmm. Is that those things that we expected and wanted and thought would always be there from the theater were not. And it is, I think, in the funhouse of this time, a very, very hard thing to feel like the job that you do and the way that you do it and the life that you've chosen as your North Star is not there, and not only like a thing that you always felt like was essential, but that you really start to understand the word essential and you understand it differently and you understand that it doesn't include you. And that is a hard thing, I think, for theater makers, or at least for me, I can't speak for everybody, to grapple with. But yes, I still think it's true. I think it is what theater does best. And I can say right now that working on The Search for Signs is doing exactly that. It is a play that deals with a kind of existential anxiety and dread. It's a play that deals with people who are searching for meaning at a time that feels meaningless. It does it through humor, and it does it through pathos, and it does it through a celebration of community and live theater. And I can really, it's the reason why I wanted to do the play. I couldn't imagine coming back to the theater and doing any other play, because this play articulates and recognizes the power of being together in a room full of strangers in the dark, laughing and crying about the same things. I just quoted the play. But that's really what this show does, is it celebrates the power of live theater. And I felt like, okay, we've learned we're not essential. We've learned sometimes the show doesn't go on. We've learned sometimes we aren't first emotional responders, but we do something. And this is what we do.
And the way that the industry is built too, the sort of, there's like a classism in within the industry as well, that even the essential things that are happening in the industry, when one is left out, and I can only speak on my experience, it feels like, well, maybe I didn't make as big of an impact in the industry as I thought I had, or maybe people actually don't see me as an influential person in this industry. Like, what have I done? Like, why wasn't I invited to that? Like, why wasn't I asked to be a part of that? Those questions that we're asking ourselves, I think, even when the industry is finding a way to create and exist, even when our resources are taken away. I mean, like, what a time to be in the theater. I mean, I know it's tough, but the one thing that's getting me through it is that, like, one day I hope I'm interviewed for PBS, and it's literally like they ask me about this time, and I'm like, oh, yes, the pandemic. You know, and just have some really, really just wonderful things to say about what I learned.
Totally.
You know, that's the one thing that's sort of keeping me going. If not, then I think I would become an Imagineer at Disney by now.
Totally.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I always, whenever I see your work or whenever I think of you, I think of a strong connection to the why. And that's why I loved that story that you shared, because it made me go, why? Why did he leave? What was the impulse and what was going on? And that's something that I think you're so brilliant at, is always connecting storytelling to what you're doing or what's going on in the moment. And I'm so excited to see Signs. I haven't yet, but
oh yeah, you got to get there.
I know, but I'm a huge, you know, Lily Tomlin fan, so it's sort of like, sure. You know, I was like always like, I wish I could have seen Lily do that, and now we have Cecily Strong doing this. And what, I mean, I don't want to ask any like really basic questions of being like, what was it like working with Cecily? Or like, what's different between this production and Lily Tomlin? But genuinely, I think I just want to open it up to like your experience on this play. I don't want to say tensions, but the things that maybe you thought were going to be easier, but actually turned out to be difficult, the things that were challenging, the things that you learned. I would love to know more about how one of our most beloved directors of our time approached this piece.
Thank you so much for saying all of that and for your curiosity. I mean, I feel like we've talked about why I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the challenges were many, and they fell into many different categories, because we worship Jane Wagner and Lily Tomlin. It's mm-hmm. a seminal piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
How do you step into those shoes? How do you even get on a Zoom with Jane Wagner and Lily Tomlin and not like lose your shit, which I still do all the time. Lose my shit and get on a Zoom with them. I felt like, and Cecily felt, that we wanted to honor what they did, that we are such fangirls of the piece and of them, but also we had to make it our own in order to really do it. And that is just a really, you know, I will say also, because I've done, I don't know, 57, 58 new plays and musicals, like I rarely find myself in the position of saying, how do I make it my own? Mm-hmm. And so that was very new for me. It was new to feel a kind of deep love and appreciation for a piece, and also know that there were parts of it we could not bring forward into 2022.
Wow. Yeah.
And that there were characters, there were lines, things that were said that would just not resonate with an audience in the same way that they were intended. And it was a different time when the piece was written. Jane started working on it in 1977. Some of the characters do not, either because we were compressing it down into a one act, either they just didn't matter enough inside of the ultimate story
mm-hmm.
to warrant being brought forward, or there was things that would resonate with people differently, that we weren't sure if we could attend to the impact of what was being spoken of and said inside of the show itself. And also just forget the content, like the show was built around Lily. Mm-hmm. And the show was built around who Lily was, who she was as a comedian, and was built around a kind of like, you know, she performed these characters in comedy clubs for years. And, you know, that's not really the way generally people make a play, you know? And so sort of what was important to hold on to, and that was really the work that Jane and I did together. And then there was just like, okay, we know we have, there's a character of Agnes Angst, and we know who Agnes Angst was in the 80s, but who is Agnes Angst of 2022? Mm-hmm. What does she look like? How does she perform? What kind of venue is she performing in? What would that be? So there was people and characters that we knew were timeless, but mm-hmm. how do you locate that timelessness inside of now? And then I think there's just the process of mind melding with another performer, which I've done. I've done many solo shows, and I've certainly had the experience of creating work with incredible, you know, Billy Crudup and Judith Light, Marina Ireland, who I've done solo shows with. And Cecily is, you know, a renowned performer and comedian and has been on SNL for 10 years, but hasn't done a play in New York. And I didn't know what it would be like to work with her. And I'll tell you I had so many misconceptions about her, but I will say my biggest is that I was really fixated on this idea that after 10 years on SNL, her retention would be very low, like that she would be very high as a flash fry, you know, because it was like, she has to learn new material every week. She learns material day of, you know, they don't even write the opening, the cold opening until like day of. So it's like, you know, I just was like, she's going to be so good day to day, but that there's going to be absolutely no growth. There's only going to be like, it's going to be a real problem, both in terms of like how things deepen, but also in terms of how she remembers. Couldn't have been more wrong. Like, couldn't have been more wrong. Like, we met, we had these weekly sessions leading up to the rehearsal process starting in early September. And every week it would be deeper. She would know more. She would have more questions. And then we started rehearsals the week of Thanksgiving. And every day built on the last. She had no problems with memory. She's had no problems with retention. And then I was so concerned because we started previews December 21st. And I was like, we're going to do 3 shows. Then we're going to go away for 4 days for the holidays. We're going to come back. The muscle's going to be gone. Not only was the muscle not gone, it was stronger than it had been before we left. I don't know how she did it. It, to me, that is like a feat of impossibility without an audience there to teach you where the show is going and how it's working. She was better on that 4th preview than she had been on the 3rd, and it has kept going every day. New things, new confidences, new deepenings, new awarenesses, new understandings, new epiphanies on stage, more alive, more in tune, more in touch. There's never been a step back. I've never seen anything like it. So that was the way that I was the most wrong about Cecily Strong.
That's incredible. It opens up this question of the director working with the multi-hyphenate. This podcast is about multi-hyphenates, and it's brought to you by a multi-hyphenate. You know, I'm an actor, photographer, producer, writer, podcaster. And there's, of course, the old staple that's, you know, jack of all trades, master of none, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I really do believe that the multi-hyphenate strengthens each hyphen for a multitude of reasons, one being that they all have to affect each other. They all have to lift each other higher. You can't just have different hobbies and say that you're a multi-hyphenate. I think like they all have to affect each other. They have to bring life to each other. They have to support each other. So do you feel, because Cecily is absolutely a multi-hyphenate, writer, producer, you know, she's an executive producer on Schmigadoon, and she, you know, she writes and she performs. She's absolutely a multi-hyphenate. Do you feel directing multi-hyphenates, this is from a director standpoint, in the audition room, in the rehearsal room, wherever, do you feel directing multi-hyphenates is a different sort of experience from other people in the room? Or do you think it's the same? Do you notice a difference, or and what is it like for you to work with multi-hyphenates in the rehearsal room?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my whole, much of my career is spent working with multi-hyphenates. You know, right now I'm about to start rehearsal on Shayna Taub's musical Sups, where she wrote the book music lyrics. She's in it. She's the star. You know, she's all up in it. You know, and in the same way, I feel like it is always, you know, Lisa Crone. I mean, there's so many people, David Greenspan, David Kale, people that I work with who are multi-hyphenates. And I think it's always amazing to me and delightful when I can say, okay, can you just take that hat off and be this person? Okay, no, take that hat off and be that, you know, and that there's this way in which we can constantly talk about the work from different perspectives. And I think that one of the great gifts of this process with Cecily is that she's a writer, she's a performer. We could, and because we were coming at the piece from a place of like deep dramaturgical investigation, we could look at each other and say, how is this working? What does Jane intend? We would go to Jane, we would propose a trim or a cut or a reordering. She would respond, she would do new writing. So it felt like sometimes I was in a room with two writers, and sometimes I was in the room with one performer, and it felt every day like it allowed the process to feel really organic and rich.
That's amazing. Because I think, you know, there are people listening that are scared to dip their toes into the multi-hyphenate life. Like, I was just talking on an Instagram Live last night about when I started discovering that I was a multi-hyphenate, and it was from my teacher, Elena Garcia, who was a guest on this podcast, you know, about a year ago, and she provided us with our, the final of sophomore year was we had to write our own one-person shows and then produce them and direct each other's and design each other's. So it was a literal multi-hyphenate experience within our classroom. So when I sort of went to Ithaca and when I went moved to the city, I had this mindset of like, yeah, I'm an actor, but I'm also interested in producing. I'm also interested in telling the story from a different perspective. And I think even if you are hired, like Cecily or whoever is doing a one-person show, even if you are hired to just perform that one role as the actor, you still have the mindset to approach the piece and be like, okay, what does that look like from a marketing perspective? What does that look like from a directorial perspective? What does that look like from a design element? And I think it can only help.
Right.
The experience, so long as you have boundaries with yourself, I think if you start to cross those boundaries within your team, okay, you're not hired to be a co-director, you're hired to be the actor, but tap into the mindset if you need to, at least you have that experience and that pathos, you know what I'm saying? I think it requires, you know, it's perfect for the experience, but it requires boundaries and requires, you know, taking care of your fellow artists as well.
Totally.
I'm really excited to see the show, but I'm also super excited about Suffs. Rachel Sussman is a dear friend, and for Remy, my boyfriend, I just got him one of his Hanukkah Christmas presents is tickets to the final dress of Suffs.
Oh, yay!
So we're gonna be there, the final dress, very excited, can't wait. And you just gave me an idea that I need to ask Shayna if she should be on the podcast.
Yes, she should. I'm so excited. And also that makes me really nervous, but also really excited.
Oh my God. It's all coming up. It's all so exciting. Lee, this has been an absolute pleasure. If there's one thing that you can send to budding multi-hyphenates or established multi-hyphenates, especially those that have director in their hyphenate list, in their hyphens, in their persona, what is something that you would like to send them off with?
I feel like thick skin. I feel like robust love for what you do. robust. And I don't know, I feel like right now we're in a, I would never have said this at another time, but faith.
Wow, yeah.
And whatever that means to you. But like I was just saying, actually about going into rehearsal on this massive musical right now, it is like an act of defiance. It is an act of stamina and it is an act of faith. And that's, I wish that for all of us.
That's beautiful. Lee, thank you so much. Is there any way we can find you on social media? Any way that we can drop you a note if we have any questions or anything like that?
Yes, I'm on Instagram. I think I'm Silverly on Instagram. And you know my email. And if you don't know it, I'll send it to you.
Thank you. You are the absolute best. And we cannot wait to see Signs. And we cannot wait to see Suffs. You light up every single room you walk into, including my life. And thank you so much for being so supportive. You're the absolute best.
Michael, you're the best. Thank you. Thank you for wearing that sweater.
Of course. Thanks, Lee.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.